public speaking requires confidence, right? For me, fitness is in two aspects. One is the appearance, and the second one is the energy. Now, when I look good in front of another person, I get confident again. When people told me that selling is a game of rejection, I didn't understand how it was a game of rejection, because ultimately they're still not helping you solve that or get over that fear of rejection.
Welcome, Swastik, and I'm really honored to have you here in my podcast, Ingestion Talks. And it's amazing because I've admired your work from very long. I've been your student in, say, like Hell Masterclass. And what you are doing is very, very, very valuable, okay? You are helping small businesses getting uproot scale, and it's unmatchable. So thank you very much for doing this.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much, Jashan. It's awesome to be here. In fact, when you sent me an invite, I was actually eager to be here. So as much as you are thrilled to have me here, I'm quite excited to be here myself, and very excited to see how this whole thing pans out.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So Swastik, abhi main aapse kuch sawal puchne wala hu, jo basic sabse pehla to sawal hai, tell more about yourself. Like, aap kaise you came to do this? You are teaching people about sales and you are helping people to upscale their business. So how did you reach here? So what's your backstory?
The backstory is quite long, I would say, but to make it a little concise and short for the session, let's see. So my backstory is that I did my engineering and I was really bad at engineering. So which means as a result, I failed out of my engineering. And the only thing that I was good at was playing some music. In fact, well, I've shifted all my music instruments to my other studio. So I'm a musician. I play the tabla, I play the drums, I play some keys. And the only thing that I was good at was playing some music. And as a result, I got invited to a band back in 2012 is where I got invited to a band. But engineering was not my thing. Music was my thing. And luckily, I happened to get into music. But what happened was one accident that made all the difference in my life. And a lot of things changed for me. After that accident, I was not in a place where I could perform because I broke both my bones. In fact, I have plates on both my arms at this point. And as a result, when you're a drummer, when you're a percussionist, if you're not allowed to play music, then that's where my career died. So at that point, I had no idea what to do. And that's where I was really, really lost. But one thing that really hurt me more than the accident or the pain of the accident itself was the fact that I hadn't accomplished anything by then, because the accident was quite severe. And one thought that kept going in my head was, what if I don't make it out? And what would I have been known for in my life? And that really, really hurt me. And at that point, I made a decision saying, I'm going to create something out of my life. So when I said I made a decision, I had no idea what I would do. A lot of people think that decision is a huge thing where you decide to build that big business and you plan it out and it happens. No, my decision was I'm going to create something out of my life. So one thing led to another. That's where I ended up getting into business. So my family is not from a business background. Have never studied business, no roots of business whatsoever. Started getting into the game of entrepreneurship. Well, started out as a solopreneur, got into interior designing, home solutions, started aggregating more people, more vendors, started putting together teams, started servicing people. And parallelly, when that started working out, I became a little more confident and started building more businesses in different spaces. But one thing that did happen was, well, the businesses went to a certain point. And after that, all of them got stuck. I didn't know what to do with them. So there was a point. I had hit one level of income. I had no idea how to take it to the next level.
Like a plateau, right?
And yeah. A plateau, I would say. My personal plateau. So I had no idea, which means what also happened was I never really found a way to take it to the next level. And a lot of these businesses were cash-driven businesses. And when this demonetization happened, the whole thing went for a toss. So at that point, what happened for me personally was it was a cash-driven business and I'd already hit a plateau. And suddenly when people stopped transactions in cash, the whole thing went down the lane and all of these businesses fell apart. So that's where I took up a job. I got into a job and I got a job as a growth consultant because I had worked in different businesses before. Now I started helping other businesses grow in my job, which was nice. Now, in a span of another year and a half, 2 years, I'm like, I started out, I wanted to create something out of myself. And the job taught me so many things. Honestly, I learned so many things on the job. because I got to look at big businesses. I got to see how these big businesses function and what they do. And I got to see the mistakes that I was personally making, which was a lot of mistakes, by the way. So I learned a lot in my job. And but at some point, that kida that is there in your head saying, you know what, you need to push yourself. You can do more. You need to do more. And I quit my job. But that point, when I quit my job, it's not just the job that I lost. Parallelly, some bad investments that my dad and I made, we lost about over a crore. And that killed everything for me. This is where I went from whatever I had to being quite literally on the roads. I remember going, trying to buy some breakfast here and I didn't have money. And that really, really hurt me. So honestly, so that was the second incident. First was the accident, very painful. The second incident where I went broke was way more painful than the accident. And this is where I didn't have a job and I wanted to do something again. I didn't know what to do. So this is where I started exploring multiple things. And I decided that, you know what? I need to study from people. I need to study. Successful people started reading books, started grinding through seminars, workshops, mentoring, coaching sessions, borrowed money. Anybody who called me, anybody, I picked up my phone. One exercise that I did, I still remember is I picked up my phone and I started going through my contacts and I started calling everyone. Anybody who recognized me, I asked them for money. That's how broke I was. I borrowed, started borrowing a lot of money. And I invested every last rupee into learning something new. And that's where I restarted my life in 2019. And that's how the journey has been from there to, again, back to building a team of about 12 people. In fact, right before this, we're just relocating to a big ass office right now. And it's I'm quite excited for that. So that's been
very exciting. Awesome, man. Awesome. So abhi jo wo, that process of whole figuring it out. Okay. And I know it's point where when you're trying to figure out how things work for you, self-doubt strikes very much. वो बार बार आता है दैट करेंगे नहीं होगा पता नहीं लोग बोल रहे हैं एज निकल रही है दिस इज द टाइम सो हाउ डिड यू डील विद दैट सेल्फ डाउट अगेन एंड अगेन
दैट इज अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग क्वेश्चन दैट यू आस्क प्राइमरीली बिकॉज द अदर डे रम्या एंड आई वी वर ड्राइविंग टू अनदर पार्ट ऑफ द सिटी रम्या इज द को-फाउंडर ऑफ सैलेड लाइक स्वस्तिक सो वी वर जस्ट रिफ्लेक्टिंग ऑन ऑल द थिंग्स दैट वी हैव डन एंड 2019 शी वाज थिंकिंग अबाउट 2019 एंड शी आस्क्ड मी How did we even get through that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's an interesting question. It's the same question that you're asking me. Because when I decided to get into this space of consulting and coaching, the number of things that I've tried, a lot of people at this point, for example, when you started the conversation, you also said, Swastik, you're helping a lot of businesses grow and you're helping them increase their sales, right? Now, that is what I got recognized for. But the number of programs, coaching, courses that I've tried delivering in the past, which have not seen the light of the day is way too high. I've recorded over 7 different programs, 7 30-day programs, run ads for it, launched it, sold it to people. I've done over 20, 25 webinars where not one person bought. And the number of programs that I've done in the past, the number of attempts and the number of failures have been insane. And what was driving me towards that when, see, at every point, when you hit that self-doubt, at every point when you hit that failure, self-doubt kicks in instantly. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You're not good at this. In fact, people would outright tell me this in my webinar.
Yeah.
In fact, I still remember Jan 2020, one person in my webinar, there were only 6 people in my webinar, out of which one person turned on his video, turned on his audio. And I could, at that point, they had the opportunity to unmute themselves because there were barely any people. He turned on his video and audio and he said to my face, I think you should leave this profession. You can never speak in your life. I'm like, shit, that really, really hit me that to another level that day. Honestly, a lot of people say use that thing to fuel you back. But when it really does happen to you, you cannot use it as fuel. You just get deeply, deeply hurt. And I remember I've gone back home crying. I've cried my heart out. Well, this was not the studio back then. I would sit there in a small table and I've sat there filled with tears that day after the webinar. The only thing that drove me was the fact that I am broke. I have no other option but to do something in my life.
Yeah.
And the third part was I knew that I could create something despite what happens. Somewhere down, I knew that, you know, I could do something. Yeah. So just that drive, personal drive that I had saying, I have to do this no matter what, that kept me going again and again and again and again. In fact, in my laptop, I still have the folders that is named failed webinar 1, failed webinar 2. All the recordings are still there. and we look at it at times and we laugh. So that's how it is.
Yeah, that's amazing because experimentation jo chalti hai ek successful idea ke piche, people never know. And that's a huge part of it. And I think if you look at it, you must be thinking ke, haan, yaar, in webinars ki wajah se bhi I'm here now. They are part of the process, right? So you also teach public speaking, right? Kind of little bit, yeah.
Not so much. See, for my community members inside, I help them with speaking because a lot of people ask me, Swastik, how do you speak better? How do you get better at speaking? How do you work on your voice? What do you do? Where have you learned it from? And honestly, one thing that I've not learned is speaking. And then a lot of people assume that Swastik, you are a naturally good speaker. And that is also not true. What I learned from was every workshop that I would attend, other than what they were saying, other than taking the content that they were saying, I've made notes on how they sold. I've made notes on how they were saying things. In fact, of course, in a notebook, it's very difficult to write the way they said something, but I would come up with my own creative ways of emphasizing something. You know, if they stressed on something, I would make it in bold letters. I would highlight it so that then I started practicing what they were doing. So I've not formally learned speaking, but it's been looking at another person and trying to recreate that. And that's exactly how I learned sales as well. Yes.
So according to you, what's your base, like most important essential for public speaking? AKSCGs, which is you think the most important for public speaking?
One thing that is very, very important for speaking itself is, and first of all, any speaking is public speaking. Right now, me talking to you is public speaking.
Yeah.
And one thing that's important for any form of speaking is confidence. And now that's a vague statement. I'll also tell you how to get that confidence. Confidence comes from subject matter expertise. When you know your subject well, your confidence kicks in as well.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. This is where a lot of people tell me, Swastik, I'm not really good at any of the subject. And that is also not true. You are good at something. It could be very, very small, but you are good at something. You need to discover what that something is. It doesn't matter how small it is. When you're starting your public speaking journey or your speaking journey, start talking with something that you're absolutely confident about. Because when you know that you know more about the subject than the other person listening to you, confidence naturally comes out. And when confidence comes out, your chest is up, your shoulders are out, and you're out there. So confidence is a key element. And this is how you get confidence, by speaking your subject, doesn't matter how small it is. So that's one of the very key parts of public speaking.
Exactly. I agree. I completely agree. So Abhi, jaise, you also, I've seen your stories. You work out a lot and you go to gym. Abhi, I think you're going through fracture, right? So yeah, get well soon, man. Get well soon.
Yes. It's been killing me. It's been 2 months of not hitting the gym and I'm like, shit.
Yeah, I can completely understand. So how does fitness play a role in your journey, in your life? And how do you manage it usually?
The fitness plays such a huge role in my life because one is, again, I told you, public speaking requires confidence, right? For me, fitness is in two aspects. One is the appearance and the second one is the energy. Now, when I look good in front of another person, I get confident again, right? And my delivery is based on confidence. That's the first aspect. The second aspect is when I'm delivering a workshop for, let's say, 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, like we usually deliver, energy is something that it has to come from within. It has to pour out and it has to go through you. It has to hit you in the face and you should be like, yes. So our workshops are usually long and I'm standing and delivering these things. And a lot of people even ask me, Swastik, where does your energy come from? It comes from, one is of course seeing them, but the second one is I train to maintain that energy, which means I look at eating right so that energy comes from there. And I look at being energetic. And every time my fitness trainer goes crazy with how much, how much I speak, he's like, Swastik, you're losing weight every time you speak. And it is actually true. When I measure my weight across the 3 days of speaking, I would have lost about 1.5 to 2 kilos. I don't know how that happens, but it just happens because I think there's so much calorie that's being burnt there. So fitness plays a very big role for me because it's the other days that I'm putting myself in shape to perform on those 3-4 days that I do.
Yeah. And most of the people think that they have to put in hours and hours into fitness. So how do you manage your fitness and like working so much, speaking so much? So aap kaise manage karte ho?
Honestly, I just came back from, meeting my fitness trainer in the morning. And today we were planning on how to restart my fitness journey, considering my fracture and all of that. And I was also telling him that we have to design a system where I work out for a lesser duration and work out with higher intensity so that I get greater results in a shorter span of time. So I'm sure you're the expert here, of course. But slow strength training is one aspect that my trainer is a very big fan of. And I'm also a big fan of that because it really pushes me. Strength training is my key aspect.
Yeah.
And the second aspect that I've been, I'm going to start working on right now is my cardios. Because I've not been doing so much cardio. But to give it, to give you how much time I spend, I don't spend more than 30 to 40 minutes in the gym. And the second one is during my cardio days, I'm going to be cycling and I listen to some podcasts. So I treat it as more of a learning hour than the fitness. So fitness is like a byproduct of me learning. So I enjoy that aspect as well. So that's the cardio space. And when I'm training in the gym, which is 3 days a week, that's the plan, current plan that we're working on. 3 days a week, we're going to be doing super slow strength training for a duration of 30 to 40 minutes. So I think, honestly, if I'm not able to take out 40 minutes in a day, at least 40 minutes thrice a week, then I have a problem in life.
Exactly. I completely agree. And main baar baar ye baat bolta hoon that if you can't even take 30 to 40 minutes like for yourself in working out for your fitness, then what's the point of doing what you're doing, right? So that, yeah, that's amazing. And I want to understand that, see, we all are humans, okay? I also go through a point in a life where I completely struck by my mental health. So when you're working and you were struggling so much, you were broke, and those time pe, how did you manage your mental health and how are you managing it right now?
Honestly, mental health, one very key aspect of mental health is good relationships.
Exactly.
Now, people, one thing that people get confused in life is they look at just the financial angle of life. And even when they're looking at the financial angle, they're looking at it all wrong. They're trying to make just enough money. Now, that is a very wrong way of looking at life in general. That's the first aspect. But they only look at the financial aspect, which means there are multiple aspects that cater to the financial aspect. Like you said, mental health is something that's very important. If you lose your sanity, nothing really happens. Every time somebody said, Swastik, you cannot talk to save your life. I had a few people in my life. I still do. I still do have those few people in my life, the relationships that I've built, who would pump me back up saying, no, I think you're doing good. You're getting better. You should just keep pushing yourself. Honestly, they're not motivating me so much, but when I had tears, I had people to rely on. I had people to rely on. In fact, the way I got started in this journey, I told you I went broke, absolutely broke in 2019. So broke that I had absolutely no money. One of my friends for my birthday, he gifted me a phone. He gifted me a OnePlus. And in fact, three of them got together. They gifted me a OnePlus and said, Swastik, go start your video journey. Go start making videos, because I kept talking about making videos, how it can make money, how you can grow in this game. It's just that I didn't have a phone. I don't know how to record. My phone was bad. He said, you know what? We've bought you a phone for your birthday. Now you have no excuses. Go start making videos. So I'm not saying go make friends who will buy you gifts. What I'm saying is having meaningful relationships in life, people who can support you during difficult times. If you can pick up a phone and talk to somebody, that is such a big aspect of mental health, which means you need to put in the efforts to build relationships. People think that relationships, you get lucky. And I'm talking both about love relationships and also your social relationships. You need to step up and make it happen. Nothing happens to you. You need to step up and make it happen. So my mental health, one strong factor is the relationships that I had. The second factor is all the inspiring content that I consumed. I'd made a decision saying I'm going to cut off every form of negativity in my life, which means absolutely no. No means no. If I hear something that's negative, now it's not called being paranoid. Few people might think that it's being crazy. Swastik, if you can't even handle a little bit of negativity, you're not a human. I can handle negativity. It's just that I choose not to listen to negativity.
Exactly.
Right. So I decided that no form of negativity will ever come into my life. I will never be told that I don't have money. I will always be looking forward to more money. I'll always be looking forward to greater health. I'll always be looking forward to bigger things in life. At no point will I make myself feel short. At no point will I make myself feel like I have less. And all of that happened through my books and my mentors again. So that was the second aspect of my mental health.
So Swastik, as you said, most of the people choose money over everything. And when they choose career, bhi choose karte hai, they look for which career can make them a lot of money. So usme they usually go with the wrong careers. So when they want to choose a career, according to you, what other aspects should people look for?
So that's an interesting question. It goes back to one of my old blogs that I used to write. It was called iTalk Music. It doesn't exist anymore. The tagline was from passion to profession. iTalk Music, passion to profession. Now, to answer that question, people go behind money and as a result, they make wrong career choices. And that's exactly what I did as well. When I started my interiors company, at least back then, I was not really passionate about interiors because I just finished my engineering. I don't have an architecture background. Again, I just knew that I could put a few people together and there was good money in that business. And that's how I got into it. And if you look at it, 90% of the businesses are started exactly this way. Don't quote me on the numbers here, but it's a vast majority of people who start business for so-called financial freedom. So when that happens, the element of passion is missing. After a while, you start getting bored. After a while, you don't want to do more of it. When there are challenges, you don't want to go beyond the normal, this one to, you know, create something. This is where you need to find profits and you need to find your passion as well. You need to see what is it that you like doing. And for that, you need to have the right skills. So skills and what you like doing combined with profits is what makes a great business. Because this is where when you face challenges, you want to go beyond the challenges. This is where you like your customers. This is where you, in fact, love your audience, love your customers, and you really want to serve them and you want to better their lives. So going behind money, I'm not denying that it'll make you some money. It could make you some money. But after a point in time, you wouldn't want more of that. And it'll most likely decline because you're not willing to persevere and push yourself.
Exactly.
So it's a very short-lived game when you go behind money.
Exactly. I completely agree. And I usually tell people that it's not about the car, home, or the luxury you get. It's about the person you become to get that. And that's more valuable. That's your achievement. And okay. So coming back to sales, how to handle rejection in a sale. And when you are completely going through that period, and I also went through a period when everybody was rejecting what I was selling. I was selling a fitness plan and everything. Everybody was rejecting it. So what is your take on that? How can we handle it?
So my game, one thing that I tell people is selling is a game of rejection. And it's not something that I've stated. It's there in multiple books, right? Now, back then, when people told me that selling is a game of rejection, I didn't understand how it was a game of rejection because ultimately they're still not helping you solve that or get over that fear of rejection. But I did come across something interesting. I don't know which book or which mentor told me this. They asked me to look at my rejection as me making money. Let me give you an example. And you know, for everybody listening to this, I hope they take this away. Let's say if you sell to 10 people, let's say you make 1 lakh rupees. For example, every person he buys 10,000 rupees from you, he or she buys 10,000 rupees. So 10 people that you sell to, you make 1 lakh rupees. So which means 10 people is equal to 1 lakh. 10 sold people is equal to 1 lakh. Now for a minute, let me assume that to get 10 people to sell to you, you have to meet 20 people. Now all of these are examples. Now, which means out of 20 people that you meet, 10 people are going to say no, 10 people are going to say yes. Now that doesn't matter because 20 people that you meet, ultimately at the end of meeting 20 people, you make 1 lakh rupees.
1 lakh rupees, right.
Which means meeting every person, doesn't matter if it's a yes or no, it's worth 5,000 rupees for you.
5,000 rupees.
Right. Now let's say to meet these 20 people, you have to make 100 calls. 100 picked up people have to pick up and you have to answer. They have to talk to you. Out of 100, only 20 people say yes. Let's assume that for a minute. Now, it doesn't matter if they say yes or no. You know, after making 100 calls, you will get 20 people to meet you, which means each call is worth 1,000 rupees for you.
Worth 1,000 rupees, exactly.
Now, it doesn't matter if they say no, it's still worth 1,000 rupees for me. Now, for this, for 100 people to answer, let's say you have to dial 200 numbers. And out of that, 100 people don't answer at all. 100 people answer. Every dialed number is worth 500 rupees to you. So if every dialed number was worth 500 rupees to you, despite what the outcome was going to be, how many calls would you make?
That's amazing. That's amazing point of view.
That's as many as possible. And honestly, when I started out, that's how I started again. When I started revamping my sales game, especially when I started doing webinars, earlier it was not show up if you want. It used to be me picking up the phone and calling each person. Every person who dropped the lead, I've called so many people. Every single person, I would follow the same formula. I had a board. I would say, okay, today I've called these many people answered, these many people paid. So this is how I started solidifying my math because I knew at the end, I came up with a number for every person that I dial, this is how much money I make. And I started feeling good about it. As opposed to looking at it as rejection, I wanted to work it on speed. If this person doesn't answer, next number. If this person doesn't answer, next number. So it didn't matter to me if I was getting rejected or not. because selling is a game of rejection. And the minute you make it a numbers game like this, it gets more interesting.
So what's your take on tips on most successful sale? Like if you want to make a successful sale, these are core principles you have to look for.
For a really successful sale to happen, first, if you ask me, there are three phases. That's how I teach, at least. The first phase is you being prepared, which means you being prepared in terms of what should the outcome of the sale should be. What should the outcome be? And not every sales meeting, the outcome is a close. Sometimes the sales meeting are just to get to know the other person. Sometimes it's just to get to know their requirements. Sometimes it's just to present your product and for them to wait. You need to know and you need to be prepared with what the outcome is. You need to be prepared with as much details as possible on the other person. And you need to be prepared with how you're going to present. That's the first phase. The second phase is the presentation part. Presenting in a way that people are like, shit, I want to watch this person. They should be watching your presentation like they're watching a movie, which means you need to develop this presentation skill. And the third phase, which most people never even get into, is the persistence phase. That's objection handling, asking for money, and following up. So these are the three phases of sale, of a successful sale. Most people, they only do one thing, that's presenting. And even that, they do it wrong. Because they think presenting is equal to talking. Presenting is wowing your customer, and that's what you need to build.
So wo wow factor jo aata hai, do you think it comes through testimonies, more of the testimonies? I think testimonies are really important. Like we sell fitness plans, okay? So testimonies are the most important, but most of the people end up telling about the services they give, about the company, and they don't talk about the testimonies. So what role does testimonies play in a successful sale?
So see, testimonials, they're very, very important because that's social proof. Social proof is a very critical element. And in fact, if you ask me, you should include that as a part of your presentation, or you should even put it out there before they even come to meet you, because they come in the right frame of mind. So one thing is, people buy what other people are buying, because humans are social beings. They buy what other people are buying, which means if they see a set of people buying something, they also want to buy that. If they see a set of people getting results, they also want to get that result. If they see a set of people getting results, they also feel comfortable about doing that. So testimonials are very, very important for sure. And if you ask me, that is also one aspect of a good presentation. So you need to add great testimonials in your presentation to make it a very, very powerful presentation.
Exactly. And okay, so I want to bring up another topic, which is, I've been working with a company in network marketing, and people are very cynical about network marketing. So why is that, and how can we change the narrative around it?
So the cynicism around network marketing comes from the fact that the barrier of entry into a network marketing system is very low. And as a part of it, anybody can come into network marketing.
Right.
So what also happens is, I told you, most people just enter any business to purely make money. Now, what also happens is, when people just have the intentions to make money, people are just going to say anything to the other person. And there's a possibility that they've sold things where they should not have been selling those things.
Exactly.
And as a result, the whole industry itself has gotten a bad name. Now, saying network marketing is bad is like saying that all cars are bad.
Exactly.
Just because a driver is bad doesn't mean a car is bad.
Yeah.
So network marketing is a business vehicle. The person who is driving that vehicle, he might be good or bad. That is something that you will have to judge. But the vehicle on itself is not bad. If you ask me, network marketing is a great opportunity for people to start and launch their business, because it's a business in a box. They don't have to look at marketing. They don't have to look at product development. They don't have to look at operations. They don't have to look at finances. They just have to look at the marketing. Well, some aspect of marketing and sales aspect of it.
Exactly.
So which means there are only two functions that you have to do. And for that, you get paid on a variable amount. So which is crazy. So network marketing is not bad. It's the driver that you need to see. And perhaps a lot of drivers who've gotten into this field, they didn't have the right intention. And as a result, the whole industry has had a bad name.
But how can we change the narrative around it? Like, I want to change the narrative around it, around my clients only. I want them to understand, no, okay, this is good opportunity. How can I do that?
So this, again, like you said, from your testimonials point of view, when you go towards selling from a point of service, which everybody should, when you go to selling from a point of service, this is where people start seeing it as service. You need to make sure that all your clients personally start seeing it as service as well. Not just you, everybody who's your downline, they need to see it as a point of service as well. So which means when you're talking, giving your network marketing talks and when you're talking to them about presenting and selling, you need to add this aspect and seed this very strongly. Because one thing that network marketing, all network marketing talks, in fact, I've attended personally many of these network marketing talks in the past, and they talk about numbers. Yes, they talk about numbers. You call these many people, this much will happen, this much will happen, this much will happen. As a result, this much money, right? Great. But nobody really talks about service. They talk about the results the product gets. But nobody talks about selling as service. Nobody talks about when you sell, you're changing somebody's life. Or nobody says you need to look at it that way. This is how I'm looking at it. And the second one is getting your downlines to take responsibility for the other person's results. When I say responsibility for the other person's results, I'm not saying that you have to give them a guarantee that they'll get results, because that's not possible.
That's not possible.
But
yeah.
You have to make sure that you are holding your client's hands and saying that, you know what, I'm going to take care of you. The client has to feel loved. And great network marketers, they've built a community where people feel loved more than anything else. And that connection is what creates that network, makes the network so special. And that is where the product pricing also becomes insignificant. So in all the network marketing talks, if you can include this one element of really caring for their downlines, really caring for their customers, a lot of things will change.
Yeah, because maine bhi dekha hai, and humne basically we focused on building community, giving them the best of the services. And we always focused ke just client ne hume pay kiya hai, it is our priority to bring them the results. And that has changed the game for us also. And community plays a very important role. And I think that's one of the most important part in network marketing specifically. And this is a very valuable. Okay, so another point of this comes is, like, you work, okay? And burnout hota hai usually. I also go through burnout. And how do you handle the burnout? Because in burnout, what happens with me, I'm very curious about this. Because sometimes I feel ki I should just go home and relax. Okay. And when I go home, I relax. I feel ki I should be working. I should be working more. So that's a vicious circle, which keeps on moving and moving and moving. And I feel very much confused in it. How do you specifically handle your burnout?
So ultimately a human being is a result of his habits and behaviors and the way they identify themselves. Right. Now, if you look at it, for a few people, let's say for you, working out might be the most relaxing thing to do.
Exactly.
And for another person, working out might be the most stressful thing to do. Right. As a result, they don't work out. Sometimes, let's say when you burn out, you might say that I'm going to hit the gym because I'm going to feel relaxed. But for the other person, he might not feel that way. Right. What I'm saying is, if you create these, the relaxation, if relaxation for you comes through really good habits that push you up, that is where your burnout becomes a regrowth phase for you. For me, when I'm going through burnout or when I'm really tired, one of my go-to things to do is to pick up a book or to pick up a course or to learn something new, which means when I'm really, really burnt out, the first thing that I do is, okay, I'm going to study something new today, because that relaxes me to another level, which means my current addiction, I would say, is learning like crazy. And this is not something that I'm saying to sound good here, but this is something that I actually do. And this is what I was telling my team the other day. When my team goes through burnout, they're like, I don't know what to do now. Right. But when I go through burnout, I end up studying a lot more. That's the first thing that I like. And as a result, my burnout phase, it keeps increasing. It's like a rubber. It's like a band. The more you extend it, the next time it can extend a little more. It can extend a little more. So the elasticity improves of your burnout rate. And for me, every time I burn out, that's the first thing. That's the go-to factor. But now the other thing that I also do is, over the course of the week, I always make sure that every single day I'm checking on my level of happiness and emotions. So on a daily basis, when I'm keeping check on that, I'm able to really understand if I'm heading in the direction that I want to, or I'm heading in the direction where I'm not functioning at my best. So see, burnout leaves clues. When you're going towards a wrong direction, or when you're going in a direction that's not going to lead to something, it'll leave you clues. Real power is about being able to spot these clues as quickly as possible and redirect yourself. So when I do see that, you know what, in the last 2 days, I've not been as happy as I wanted to be. And when I say, I check this out, I rate myself on a daily basis.
Like, I actually give myself a rating. How do you check your level of happiness?
It's just about how I feel. It's just about how I feel. In the end of the day, one thing that I do is as soon as I wake up, one thing that I note down is what was my level of alertness when I woke up. And there is no right or wrong way to do this. It's the way you feel on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10. How alert do you feel? 7. Okay. First number, just go with it. There's no math to it. Right? But over a period of time, you would have defined what 7 is for you. You would have defined what 8 is for you. So the same thing with respect to my happiness when I go to bed. How was my day today? How happy was I today? How do I feel right now when I'm going to bed? I rate myself 1 to 10. And over a period of time, these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 numbers, it becomes a language to describe how happy you are. When you're starting out, it might not make sense, but you do it for a period of 30 to 60 days, you will know what each of these numbers mean. And if I start seeing that on a consistent basis, my happiness is, let's say, below 7 for 3-4 days, now I know that I need to do something, because that's where I start seeing, okay, I've been just working. I've not been doing anything else. I've not been talking to my family properly. It happens to everybody. It's just about being able to redirect. The next day you plan an outing with your family, or you plan dinner, or you plan movie, or you plan a play, and then you're back to feeling connected again. So the more you are in check with where you're heading, the less burnout you will have.
Exactly. That's amazing. This is going to help me a lot. And so what's your suggestion to entrepreneurs who are just starting, who are just beginning, who are just thinking to start their business and something? So what should they focus most on initially?
The first thing, before you start a business, check if you really like this first. Ask yourself this question. Am I just getting into this because of money? Or am I getting into this because I like this? And honestly, this is going to be a tricky answer, because your mind is going to cheat you in multiple ways. It's going to tell you, no, I'm very passionate about it. Right? But really ask yourself this question. Ask yourself this question multiple times and see if you really like it. That's the first part. The second one is, see if you have the right skills that are required to be in that particular business. Because every business is going to have a different set of skills.
Yes.
And there are a few fundamental skills that are required for every business. Ask yourself if you have the skills for it. And if the answer is no to the skills part, ask yourself if you can develop this in a short span of time. Because if you tell yourself that I'm going to develop this in 2-3 years, honestly, with the rate the world is changing, 2-3 years, the skill that you develop perhaps will no longer be valid also. I'm not trying to scare people here, but I'm trying to, you know, make them aware on how quickly the world is changing. See if you can develop that skill in a span of 3 to 6 months. And today, with the access to the internet, you can develop any skill provided you like what you do. So develop the skills, make sure you like what you do, and then go out there. And then one thing that you need to remember once you start is, it is a game of failure. It's a game of failure. It's the number of times you get back up as opposed to the number of times you fall. Because honestly, I don't mean to demotivate anybody here. When you start something, you are going to fall. And when you fall, that is absolutely okay. When you started cycling the first time, you didn't go on a race, you fell down. Right? Doesn't matter how good the cycle was. Doesn't matter how many times you ran it in your head. But when you started cycling, you perhaps fell almost every time. Right? Remember that. It's about how many times you get back up.
Amazing. I completely agree, because failure is part of the procedure. It's part of the procedure, right? So, okay. So if I want to build a business right now, and as you told, I'm going to check on my values, on my skills and everything. So uske baad, if I want to grow exponentially, like what are the key elements exponential business should have? And I should look for day one, ki mera business exponentially grow ho, aapke hisab se.
So one is, when you're also testing, now if you're really planning on getting into a business and you want it to really grow, you need to check if the scalability factor is high for a particular business. For example, let's say if I'm planning to start a studio, if I'm planning to start a studio like this. Now, this studio scalability factor is not going to be all that high today, right? Because the studio can only run for, let's say, 12 hours a day. That's one thing. The second one is, people have to come to this location. And if I have to recreate this in another space, I have to find a location. And I also should set it up, and I should have the investment as well. Scalability only comes in when I have enough money to create multiple branches of this. Right? So test for scalability. Is this something that you can easily scale? Are the products easily creatable? That's the first thing. Is the product in good demand? And will this stay in demand for a while? Yes. The third one is, can I buy traffic into this product? Because the ability to buy customers is very, very important. A lot of people ignore this. If you, if you're the person who's spending the most amount of money to acquire a customer, you are going to win, provided you have a greater funnel, which means if you have more products to sell in the future, or if you're going to be selling recurring products to the same customer, you should always pay to acquire customers. It's a very important skill to have.
Exactly.
So if you can pay to acquire customers, if the scalability factor is good, and if the product is in demand, then all you need to do is put your butt down and start buying traffic and start driving traffic to that space, and you will start growing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a very nice step. That's a very nice step. Okay. So I also want to ask you, as you told it, that you were going through this very difficult phase in your life and you went through the learning procedure. Okay. You learned like crazy. So what are the best courses that you did on internet or whatever the courses you go through? Jo aapke hisab se har insaan ko wo course karna chahiye if they want to be good in sales and in their business.
Honestly, I've done so many courses, and there's no way I can say which course everybody should be doing. If you ask me, everybody should be doing all of them. But see, I can tell you the functional expertise that people should pick up, and perhaps a few names in that domain as well. One person has to learn how to sell a product. There is no doubt that a product or service, you have to learn how to sell it. The second skill is the skill of marketing, which means getting people to look at your product. That's the second skill that you need, right? And the third one, the skill of managing money and cash flow in your business. If you have these three skills, parallelly, you can start acquiring more skills. And if you look at sales, I have personally learned sales from people like Zig Ziglar. A few aspects from Bob Proctor as well. So many of these people. Then if you look at marketing, Dan Kennedy is a person that I would recommend. Such an amazing person with respect to insights on marketing is beautiful. And with respect to money management, no name really comes on the top of my mind, but there's so many books that you can read. In fact, go pick out a bestseller book itself and start reading it. And there's so much you will learn. It's like this, a lot of people get stuck, which is the best thing that I should buy, right? Honestly, when you're starting out, even at this point for me, any book that I buy, I learn so much from it. Even though the content might be the same, the place I am in life is very different, right? So the way I am reading the book is very different. So a lot of people ask me, Swastik, I'm researching a lot of my course. What are you researching on? I need to get the best out of the course. Like, go do that course. You will get it. No, Swastik, what if there is a better course out there? Go do that as well. No, but what if I spend money and then it's the same thing there? Anytime you learn anything from anybody, you will always learn something new, provided you go in the right mindset.
Exactly. I completely agree with that. And coming back to books, I am also a reader. And people usually ask me, how did you develop your habit? So I'm going to ask you, how did you develop your habit and how are you maintaining your habit of reading?
The developing part of the habit, like I told you, it came from desperation. I told you when I was broke, that's when I picked up the first book. I picked up Awaken the Giant Within. So if anybody asks me which is one book that you have to read, I recommend that for them. Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins. That's the first book I picked up. And it showed me that people go through a lot of shit in life. Right? Then when I started reading more books, I'm like, this is a great shortcut in life. Reading a book, honestly, is a shortcut in life. Because if Tony Robbins has spent, if he's curated, it doesn't even matter. Let's say if somebody has written a book purely by curating information, not a single thought in their mind, they just collected information and put in the book also. That's the greatest thing for you because they save so much of your time. If you ask me, books, courses, mentors are the shortcuts to life that nobody talks about. Everybody looks at books as shit, it takes so much of my time. Read one book and think about how much time it shortens in your life, how much time it gives you. So when I started going through this journey, that's why I started getting addicted. That's why I call it a growth hack that nobody talks about. So my development, it became a habit because I was learning so much. And as a result of that learning, I got to grow so much. I'm like, shit, why would I ever stop doing this? And including now, every time I'm walking around, I have earphones plugged in and there's a book always playing. Few people are like, Swastik, aren't you overdoing it? See, there are times where I feel like I'm overdoing it. And there are times where I don't understand anything that I'm reading in the book. Those are the times that I stop. It's okay to take a break, right? But now it's become such a big part of my life that it's a very ingrained habit in my life. So how did it become a habit? I started seeing success. And when you see success in something, it's just addictive. So when you're reading something, read a book, not because you want to read it, read a book that will help you solve an immediate problem and take action on that problem. And guess what? When you take action, you will see results, right? Exactly. And when you get that result, you're like, shit, this book was good. Now read another book to solve another problem. And now you 3-4 times you solve a problem, you get addicted to reading.
Yeah, and I always say reading a good book is like having conversation with the greatest men in the greatest men in the world, and it's amazing. Yeah, Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, and people are amazing. Okay, so Abhi, iske baad, what are your basic core principles in life? Like something you cannot compromise with in your business also, in your life also, ke iske saath I'll never compromise it.
I think one of the things that we don't compromise on is integrity. Integrity is saying something and doing what you say will. Yeah. Because see, there are times where we have to postpone our workshops for multiple reasons. One of the things is my fracture. I had to postpone so many workshops because of my fracture, simply because I couldn't stand. Now, that being said, I've done a workshop for 3 days without, you know, with my cast on as well. But one of the things that I cannot compromise is delivering a half-baked solution. Yeah. So that's something that I cannot compromise on. And for me, that is a very important aspect. When people come into the workshop, they are in that energy. They are going out with that transformation. They are going out with a feeling of, I can create something of my life. That's very important for me. So which means backing this one is that integrity. Say something and do what you say you will. And as a result, if I look at it for the last 60 weeks, every Wednesday without fail, I promised people that I'd be live every single Wednesday. Not one day have I missed it. Even when I was in the hospital, I've taken calls from the hospital because that's an element for me. If I say something, I have to do it. So integrity is a very strong value for me.
I completely agree with it. And integrity se yaad aata hai, then when people make sales, they usually tell small lies to make a sale. And why do people do that? And how can they make sure that they don't have to do this?
See, people lie because they feel that if they give them the truth, the customer is not going to buy. It's as simple as that, right? If you feel that the customer is not going to buy when you speak the absolute truth, you're going to start putting in small lies or small white lies. What are white lies? Omission. It's lies by omission. Without saying something, when you omit something, if you don't tell the customer something, that's a lie by omission. Right. One of the things that I tell people is selling is when you give people absolute clarity in life. Tell them everything, the good, the bad of your product, because every product, irrespective of what happens, there are crazy factors which are good. And there are a few factors that are missing. Outright state that. And this is where a conversation becomes real for the customer also. People don't realize that stating their drawbacks, it gives them sales power. They think that they have to hide the drawbacks. Honestly, if you ask me, stating your drawbacks gives you that sales advantage because now the other person is seeing the whole conversation to be a truthful conversation. Because if you keep stating, telling people, this is the best, this is the best, this is the best, the customer is thinking, there is something that's wrong here. Right? He's not able to figure out what that is, but they're thinking there's something that's wrong. But the minute you state, you know what? All of these things are good. The only thing is, this is one thing that's missing. If this is an important part to you, I would recommend you not work with us. But if you think this is something that you can omit, because we've also omitted this, or we don't have this particular feature, or we don't have this benefit, is because we don't see people using it much. And we didn't want to add this and make it more expensive. So if you state the obvious and tell them the drawbacks, tell them what is missing, it becomes a real conversation and people want to buy that. And now when you state that, you can also give them a comparison. The other person is offering you this, but this is missing.
Yeah.
Make the whole conversation as real as possible, because the more real the conversation, the more sales you will make.
And isi ke saath, when people are selling, na, they agree too much with their client. Okay. And like people, they agree all the time. Ki, theek hai, if you don't want to do this, okay, we'll cooperate with this. So how can we make this value in front of our client? No, you have to go by our rules also if you want best out of our services. How can we set up that like mutual respect while selling?
So selling is between two equals. People get it wrong with the statement customer is king. Whatever the king says, you have to say yes. Yes. Whatever the queen says, you have to say yes, ma'am. Now this is where people get it wrong. People put the customer here and they put themselves here. And honestly, people think that this is respecting the client. It's not. Even when you place them just in front of you, I'm not saying disrespect the client. You have to respect the client for sure.
Yeah.
But it's between two equals.
Yeah.
They have a problem, you have a solution, and it's a match.
Hmm.
Now, the solution will only come, like you said, when they do a few things that you get them to do.
Hmm.
For example, right now there's a camera. The problem was my old webcam was not as good. Hmm. And the solution is there is a new camera that looks really good and it helps the whole background look very nice.
Hmm.
Now, if I say that this camera also is not directly going to connect to my PC, it requires another, audio card. So many things that are required in addition to this camera. Now, if I say I'm not going to buy all this, there's another way to make this work wirelessly. It doesn't work as efficiently as when it's connected with a video card.
Hmm.
Now, if I say I'm not going to follow that, I'm not going to get the outputs.
Hmm.
You state, make that statement. You can use it in this way or this way. When you use it this way, you get the maximum amount of results. When you use it this way, this is going to be the problem.
Hmm.
It's between two equals. You need to state what they have to do to get the results, especially in your case, since you're in the fitness space. They have to do a few things.
Yeah, they have
to. It's not signing up with you for training or signing up with you for supplements is not enough.
Mm.
They have to use it. They have to work out. They have to use it on time. They have to use it with consistency.
Consistency.
And state this with confidence. Again, authority is what matters. Authority, when you speak in authoritative tone, when you speak with confidence, when you show them results, when you show them success stories, and when you feel that the product is right, you will step up with confidence. And this is where you need to tell the client that if you're willing to do this, you can work with me. In fact, if you ask me, in your game, it comes to more of a qualification process. You don't sell to everybody. You qualify the people to work with you because ultimately your reputation is at stake.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's
so it's a game of qualification.
Yeah, that's we do look people like eligibility criteria set karte hain that you have to qualify for that if you want to start. We basically focus most on why you want to start with your fitness plan. And that's a very important role. And most of the people come like mere bhai ki shaadi hai, ya I cannot make a new girlfriend. And these are very foolish reasons, I believe, because as soon as your brother's marriage go away, you have no motivation to work out. You have no motivation to follow your plan. Okay, so why is something very specific we look for? And once we make a sale, what are the aspects of the best customer service we can build around it?
Once you make the sale, the first part is eliminating buyer remorse, I would say. What is buyer remorse? When somebody buys something, they paid the money and after that, they're like, shit, I just spent this money.
Yeah.
Right, they had something, now they don't have it. Now they have your product, but they're not seeing it that way.
Oh.
They're like, I don't have money now. I used to have money, now I don't have money. So the first thing that you need to do is eliminate buyer remorse, which means you need to acknowledge them for the buying the product. You need to get them to realize that they made a good decision by spending that money on your product. So that's a very important step a lot of people miss out on. Acknowledging your customer and eliminating buyer remorse. The second one for great customer service is give them an experience while consuming your product. Go the extra mile. Extra mile services where you don't have to state this, but doing something beyond what you stated, all of this leaves an impact in their minds. And if you ask me, this is also what leads to other people talking about your product or your service to, you know, more people. You know what? I just spoke to Jashin and he called me today. It was crazy. Jashin has 153K followers, but he picked up the phone with me and I can't believe I'm talking to Jashin. Right? So all of these factors, it creates that feeling in their minds. And I'm not just talking about you. It could be anybody, even your team, when they're doing it.
Understand, yeah.
When they go the extra mile, it leaves an impact. You have to design it, by the way. When I say go the extra mile, a lot of people think that when it happens, it happens. Honestly, you have to design these extra mile moments and you have to wait for the right solution. You need to have multiple extra mile moments designed and drafted as a part of your sales system. And when you feel like the time is right, go grab that opportunity to go the extra mile and wow your customer.
Completely agree with this. I completely agree. I can see this because matlab ek aspect hota hai, but to have this right vocabulary and jargon for it, it makes whole lot of sense. Okay, so another question is why don't friends and family buy our products? Like, you see people around friends and family mein jinko sabse zyada zarurat hai and they don't buy services from you, and people usually get very demotivated by this. How to handle that, and what's actually the psychology behind it?
Honestly, I'm the wrong person to answer this question, because one thing that I tell everybody is do not sell to your friends and family. Although in network marketing, the first thing is they say, you know, go approach your immediate family.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I feel like people shouldn't sell to their friends and family. One is, it is taken for granted, right?
Exactly.
It's taken for granted. Now, why is it taken for granted? That's because it's your human mind that anything that you have, you take it for granted. For example, right now, the first time I got the studio, I'm like, wow, I have to be sitting here using this. I'm excited. But now it's the same studio. It's been over a year. I turn it on and it's the same normal stuff. Exactly. I'm excited about the next office now. And in a month, when I move into that office, it's going to become a new normal. Right. So that's how your mind works. So especially with family and friends, your mind is like, acha, that person. So that's the mindset. That's the first aspect. The second aspect is also, if you ask me, now because you are very closely related, they have outrageous expectations. If they buy something from you, they demand crazy stuff.
Exactly. This happens. Yeah.
And if you ask me that when you're starting out, it becomes a demotivating factor for you. Right? It becomes a demotivating factor for you. And you feel like, no, it's not working out. You don't feel good about it. So that's one of the reasons I tell people not to sell to their friends and family. What I say is, create an identity where your friends and family are watching. See, everybody is watching you. Today on social media, every damn person is watching you. My entire family is watching me. They're perhaps keeping a greater eye on me than anybody else, right? They're watching me for sure. Show them the success and then let them come to you. Let them come to you asking for stuff, and it'll happen if you do it right.
But agar swastikam, if we'll not work through the circle of influence, then how can we build up a base and show them the success for them to come?
Right. So this is one of the challenges that I have with network marketing as well. When I talk to people with network marketing, because everybody talks, go to your circle of influence. And honestly, it's right, because they're right next to you.
Yeah.
Right. But what you can also do today is, you don't have to rely on the circle of influence today. And you can expand your circle of influence. Right now, your circle of influence is your immediate family. Right. But go beyond that circle of influence. Today, if you're on Instagram and if you're putting valuable content, you are putting a lot of valuable content. Why do you have 153K followers?
Exactly.
Is it 153K family members that you have?
No.
That's because you've expanded your circle of influence, right? And honestly, anybody can do it. And their circle of influence is not just their friends. When you go out there and put some valuable content, or if you start running advertisement in network marketing, you can't directly run ads to a product, but you can run ads to build your brand. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
When more people start seeing you, your circle of influence improves. And if you put a story saying, if you want to get in touch with me, if you want a, let's say you have a six pack, if you want a six pack, if you want a six pack system, send me a message saying six packs and I'll get in touch with you. Now somebody who's interested will get in touch with you. So turn everything outbound to inbound. Even with your existing family, instead of saying, Jashin, hey, do you want six packs? That's one way of saying, or on daily basis, I show you that I have six packs and I keep putting it on my WhatsApp story saying, if you want six packs, send me a message saying 6P and I'll get in touch with you. Now, let's say you are my family member and you happen to get in touch with me. It still becomes an inbound sale, and an inbound conversation is way more powerful than an outbound conversation.
Exactly.
And that's exactly how you can do it for network marketing as well. Forget that immediate circle of influence, because it'll demotivate you more than motivate you. Honestly, learn social media marketing. And again, social media marketing is not all that complicated. You just need to put good content.
It's very
show it to the right side of people. And initially, when you're starting out also, you can just see, by creating a right buyer persona, you can start following people who fit in your persona, right? Let's say my audience, let's say if I realize my audience are people like Jashin and N more people like him, I start looking for you on Instagram. I start following you. Now, every time I follow you, you get a notification. And you might come back and check my profile. Let's say out of 10 people that I follow, 3 people might check out my profile. Yes, possibility, right?
Yeah.
Now, if that person finds your profile interesting, they will follow you. Now, the minute they follow you, don't send them a message saying, hi, do you want to buy my product? You can send them a message saying, hi, thank you for being connected. That is something you can do for sure. Keep giving value after that. Put more videos on how to build six packs. What should you be eating? How should you be working out? And keep putting stories saying, if you want six packs, send me a message saying 6P and I'll get in touch with you. Now, it's a slow process, but once it starts, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. People, you know, underestimate this.
Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, I completely get the idea of what you're saying. It's actually very impactful because starting में ही लोग अपने circle of influence पे इतना ज़्यादा ज़ोर लगा देते हैं and they feel very demotivated because when people don't buy.
They do, they do. And see, the thing is, I've worked with multiple people in network marketing, and that's how I know this. And these are systems that we've created for them.
My family friends are not buying, so this might not work for me.
Yes.
And most of them quit in that basis. So that's a very good. That's very good. And okay, I'm gonna come to the last question. We are almost done with the time. So what does impact your like what impact you want to bring through your business in the community?
So for me, I'm heading towards the direction of creating people who are influential to other people. Now, if I'm influencing 100 people, if I create 100 people who can influence 100 people individually, that's where a ripple effect is created.
Exactly.
So that's the vision that we are trying to create. We are trying to create business influencers who both have a product to sell and who have a vision to sell.
Yeah.
And a combination of two is what will change the world.
That's amazing. That makes so much of sense. So thank you, Swastik. Very nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jashan. It was lovely being here on the podcast with you. You can never knock me.